knowledge fight. Dan and Jordan, I am sweating. KnowledgeFight.com. It's time to pray.
I have great respect for Knowledge Fight.
Knowledge Fight. I'm sick of them posing as if they're the good guys, saying we are the bad guys. Knowledge Fight.
Dan and Jordan. Knowledge Fight.
I need money. Andy in Kansas. It's time to pray. Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a fisherman calling. I'm a huge fan.
I love your work. Knowledge Fight.
KnowledgeFight.com. I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes that sit around, drink novelty beverages, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Oh, indeed we are. Dan.
Jordan.
Dan.
Jordan.
I have a quick question for you.
Sure.
What's your bright spot today?
My bright spot today is a follow-up to our...
Follow-up.
Yes, to our bonus episode that we put out on Wednesday.
Indeed we did.
People can find that over on patreon.com/knowledgefight.
You can just look at it.
Sure. You don't have to be a subscriber,
you don't have to be a subscriber
or anything.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
free. It's public. Yeah, yeah. But it's posted there on that page. And we had played a delightful game of Thomas Jefferson or not Thomas Jefferson quotes.
Indeed.
And my bright spot is following up on some things from the Zip mailbag.
Okay.
So Nick sent some chocolate and some of these little nano blocks.
Ah, yes, yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I have to say, first of all, that nano blocks are the coolest, greatest thing. They are like little tiny Legos. And
yeah.
I found building this pelican to be incredibly like a zen state. I just felt really good. I was relaxed building this. Because you do have to focus.
Yeah, yeah,
can't
yeah.
Put the
yeah.
piece in the right
yeah,
place.
Yeah.
It was great. It was like a really... It really triggered a lot of those feelings that I had that I loved about Legos, and I appreciate that that gift. And then also a follow up on that chocolate, the fizzy jelly.
Did you save any for me?
No,
I did not think so, and it was brutal because the moment you told me you liked it, I was like, I would like to try it, and I know I'm never going to get the chance.
I will order a bar just so you can try
just
it.
Just so I can try it.
It was so good.
How was it good? How was it good?
It was balanced.
Was it gummy and did it chewy?
There were little bits of gummy, but not like offensively so.
Okay.
Like it wasn't like there was a like gum in the middle
okay.
of something.
All right.
And then there was like a fizziness, like Pop Rocks kind of
really?
Thing. But it wasn't over the top fizzy.
Okay.
It was a nonsense
okay.
candy bar.
All right. Okay.
On paper, it doesn't work, but it was so good.
This is one of those things where you're going to have another one and you're going to be like, you know what? I realize all I liked was the fact that these things don't happen to me before. And now that I've tried them again, they're awful.
There's a chance.
Yeah.
But as it stands now, I ate the fucking shit out of that bar.
Well, I want to try it. I want to try it. You so could have saved me a piece.
Nope. So what's your bright spot?
Well, my bright spot was going to be the piece of chocolate I was about to eat.
Wow.
Not going to happen. No, my
you know who has
spot.
It? Don Grand Prix has
oh,
that
no!
chocolate.
Yeah. How's he doing?
Not good.
my bright spot is a movie called Wild Mountain Time, I think is what it's called. And it is an inexplicable movie. I love it. You know those
it's
movies?
The fizzy jelly candy of movies.
A little bit, yeah. You know those movies where you're like, this is not a good movie. This is not a bad movie. This movie just needed to exist where it didn't before. Like, it's just a thing that you're like, I'm glad that's there now. It wasn't. And it's my favorite type of story.
I don't know exactly what you're talking about.
It's my favorite type of story for two reasons.
Okay.
One, it opens up with Christopher Walken doing voiceover in a terrible Irish accent that sounds like somebody doing an impression of Christopher Walken trying to do an Irish accent.
Okay.
It's fantastic. And you're like... Oh, this is probably going to stop. Nope.
Keeps going.
Oh, yeah. Doesn't
this
stop.
This leads me to believe that it is a bad movie.
No, it's amazing.
Okay.
It's amazing. And it's also my favorite type of Irish story, of which there are only two. There are two Irish stories in the world, Dan. There's Irish stories that go like this. Oh, my God, you're an outsider. Get the fuck away. And then over time, they're like, okay, fine, you can stay. But you know too much, so you can never leave. Or the other kind where it's like, get the fuck away from here. And then they leave. Like, those are the only two types of... There's no story where the Irish people grow and change. Nuh-uh, you're either in or out, and that's it.
Okay.
And this is very much one of those stories. And then, the way it could be sold to you, the way that people are going to review it is there's, like, a twist at the end. There is not a twist. It's not a twist. It's just a reason, and it's going to blow your fucking mind.
Okay, I'm not going to watch this movie, but...
You got to see it.
Okay, fine.
I'll watch it.
Just because I want people to talk about it. I want more people to talk about it. I want to talk about
this
movie.
You're going to get some messages now from people who want to discuss Rocky Mountain Fever, or whatever it's called.
It's an insane movie. I can't wait.
All right. Well,
all right.
Jordan, today we have an interesting episode to go over. Mm-hmm. My path was winding and rocky as I got to this episode, but... I think we're going to have some fun. And before we get into the episode itself, let's take a little moment to say thank you to some folks who have signed up and are supporting the show.
I think that's a great idea.
So first, Galen O. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, Galen.
Thank you. Next, Milo F. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Milo.
Thank you. Next, Devin. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, Devin.
Thank you. Next, Most Nate. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much, Most Nate.
Thank you. Next, Brody W. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much, Brody.
Thank you. Next, Richard H. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, Richard.
Thank you. And then finally, Jimmy Van Gogh. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much, Jimmy Van Gogh.
All one word, no less.
I like that. That's Jimmy Carter's brother in the way it's Vincent Van Gogh's brother. Like that kind of,
makes sense.
Yeah.
If you're out there listening and you're thinking, hey, I enjoy this show, I'd like to support these gents, you can do that by going to our website, knowledgefight.com, clicking the button that says support the show, or...
What you could do is you could take that generosity and you could just funnel it into some sort of creative spirit, and it doesn't matter what it's about. It doesn't matter what it's about or whether or not it's good. What it's about is getting it out there. So even if you're confused by your generous spirit, put it out there, take it to a local bail funder charity, and I'll be goddamned if it's not better said in Ireland. So there you go.
There you go. Landed it.
Yeah, thank you.
So Jordan, this episode today, we're gonna start where I'm sort of going down this road, starting with a little bit from Wednesday, December 9th,
okay,
on Alex's show. He's in a weird headspace, kind of just bragging. There's about a half hour at the beginning.
There's about a half hour bragging.
About half hour of him just talking about how he's, like, so popular. Everybody loves him.
All right.
I mean, look, we've been taking off almost every box system that plugs into the internet and quote, gives you cable. But Cloud TV is owned by Patriots. They put us on 2 years ago. We're number one on Cloud TV. And if you combine all news channels together, including OAN, we're bigger than all of them. Newsmax, OAN, all of them together. And again, they're kind of shocked by that. They even moved us. Used to, we were at the top because whatever was number one, they put at the top. They kind of moved us to the bottom. Like, well, he just dominates too much. We kind of hide his link.
Like a good reason.
These channels will get some more viewers. And I'm not in competition with those folks. I love OAN. I really like Newsmax. It's just that.
They won't play.
It's just funny because we have more viewers than all of them combined on Cloud TV. Obviously, OAN is on a bunch more cable systems and satellite systems, and I love it. And I hope OAN or Newsmax become the number one stations. I don't care.
We're too popular. We're just so popular. We're too popular. They used to put us up at the top because we were so popular, but now they put us at the bottom, so other channels have
that
a chance.
That really doesn't sound right. That doesn't sound like good business logic
this
to me.
This goes on for so fucking long. I was getting so annoyed, and then Alex was like, not only am I the most popular thing, I'm also, like, super alpha.
See, I'm an alpha male, so when I was a kid, I had the alpha jeans, I guess, and I'd see a stupid movie like Jason.
Jinko jeans?
Friday 13th, where a guy's coming at you with a knife and you don't fight back and you run and you fall down and you bleed. I thought that was fake. I've grown up now. Actually, the average man or woman does fall down and starts groveling and going, please, no, oh, oh. But now, actually, if Jason pulled a knife out, the average liberal would run up and grab it and go, I love you, I love you, this is good for me.
Isn't in horror movies, isn't the thing that people trip? Isn't that generally
running
away, they'll like...
Yeah, yeah. No, white women in a scary situation in a horror movie are going to fall.
But even dudes, too. Like, you trip
dudes
over your
too,
feet.
But it's, it's the trope that...
Sure.
Yeah.
I don't think that the people... I don't know. Maybe there are some horror movies where people intentionally fall down and beg off with Jason. But I think it's mostly, like, they're trying to get away, and then something happens.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No,
anyway,
they were doing their best. They weren't like, oh, shit. Ah!
Maybe this monster... will have mercy.
Oh, what I should have tried was groveling.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, I just got so damn tired of this.
Yeah.
I was just like, I need...
Why?
Because it was annoying. And it was meaningless. And so I just needed something, anything to go on. And there was one talking point that was going on Wednesday's show. Like I was trying to find like this, something to pull out.
Yeah.
And this is something that is worth discussing.
We've got a lot more here to cover, but FDA, six people died during Pfizer COVID vaccine trial.
So we're going to be talking about something else as a whole on today's episode, but I did want to bring this up. I think it's important for us to cover this, and probably the sooner the better, because that feels like it's going to become a big talking point.
Yep.
On his show this week, Alex has been repeating this particular headline with outrageous repetition. Over at InfoWars, you can find the headline, quote, FDA, six people died during Pfizer COVID vaccine trial. The actual article covers some of the details of this story, but these details, you don't really hear them when Alex covers it on the show, because he just reads headlines, then rants about what he wants the story to be about. It sounds scary that six people died in these trials, but in cases like this, it's crucially important to consult the actual information to see what the data says. If you go to the FDA's website, you can find the Vaccines and Related Biological Products Advisory Committee briefing document on the new Pfizer vaccine. If you read this document, you'll find that six participants in the trial are dead. But that number has to be understood in context. The first thing to consider is that there were 43,252 participants enrolled in the study. Six out of that is a very low number. But even so, if the vaccine killed six out of 43,000 people, that still might be a cause for concern.
Well, I mean, if there's 330 million people getting the vaccine, then
right.
Yeah.
You scale up and that could be
totally.
A lot of people.
A huge number.
It would, you know, so that's why you kind of need to look a little bit further in the text. If you do, you'll find that four out of the six deaths were people who were in the placebo group, which is to say that they didn't even get the vaccine that's being tested. These deaths are absolutely unrelated to the vaccine because they didn't get the vaccine. So that leaves us with two people in the experimental group who died.
One of whom was retroactively John F. Kennedy, so we know why he went down.
His corpse was immune from COVID, though.
It didn't get COVID.
So these two individuals were both in the older group, which means that they were over 55 years of age. One experienced, quote, cardiac arrest 60 days after dose two and died 3 days later. This was a person who was in the trial, but 2 months afterwards had a heart attack. This is sad for that person, but almost certainly unrelated to the vaccine. The other person experienced, quote, arteriosclerosis and died 3 days after dose one. Arteriosclerosis is a gradual condition, and it's kind of absurd to imagine that it developed in 3 days because of a vaccine. In this case, it seems almost certain that there was an underlying condition unrelated to the vaccine that precipitated the death. I thought it might be possible that you could make a study out of whether or not the vaccine could have exacerbated an existing arteriosclerosis, but that doesn't seem like it was a major concern of the authors. Didn't seem like it was likely. So there were two deaths in the experimental group, but both are unlikely connected to the vaccine itself, but that report is being misrepresented and reported by people like Alex to be that six people died in the trial and you're gonna die too.
It seems like a very obvious oversight for any news organization not to at least be like, six people died in the trial, only two received the vaccine in the headline.
I'm not positive how any other outlet reported it,
so I
can't speak to that. I do agree with you.
Yeah, that seems that you gotta do that.
It's an important
detail.
Yeah, you
can't not do that.
Four in the placebo group is very important when you're looking at that number. If two-thirds of the number you're talking about is in the placebo group. But I only know how it was reported on InfoWars, and of course, their standard is lying.
A little bit of a different situation,
The paper itself from the FDA explicitly lays this out. Quote, the incidence of severe adverse events and deaths were low in the context of the number of participants enrolled and comparable for experimental and placebo.
Yeah.
So, this is a disgusting lie on Alex's part, which he's able to pass off by neglecting to inform his audience of what the headline he's reading actually means. He gives the audience the illusion that he's informing them of important stuff when he reports that six people died in the vaccine trial, but what he's actually doing is misinforming. The flashy clickbait-style headline is not necessarily untrue itself, but the conclusion it's meant to lead you to is a lie and a misrepresentation of the facts. So I got this. And I just was like, I'm not feeling it.
Yeah.
We got one thing that's like, okay, that's important.
Yeah.
And it'll probably be something you hear about moving forward as more countries roll out a vaccine.
Sure.
But I was like, I don't care. I don't want to listen to half an hour of Alex rambling about how great he is. And then I started to think about it. This weekend, Alex is supposed to go down to D.C.
Yeah.
He's supposed to go move to D.C.
Sure.
And that means I got to write a song about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. You've got some work to do.
So I felt like Monday.
A lot of follow-ups don't equal the original.
Monday, we've got to get into like Alex going to D.C. and sure. all that stuff. And
yeah,
we'll
yeah.
have a little better idea of what happened with that protest.
We have a responsibility.
Right. So I was thinking, we have a responsibility to do other things. And maybe now is the best time.
We're not going to do Rogan, are we?
Would you take DMT with Joe Biden?
God 100%. Damn it.
100%.
God damn it. Oh, shit.
Yeah. So we're going to cover the time
God
that last week, I think, maybe. Yeah, just recently, Joe Rogan showed up in Alex's studio in Austin, and they did a four-hour interview, which I regretfully...
I have just one thing to say. I have just one thing to say about the vaccine shit, which is that I mean, just to take one quick step back, it is amazing to me that they can turn six dead in this trial into a terrifying thing whenever, like, we went from a brand new disease to a vaccine in a year and a half. That's a fucking miracle. It's a
less than a year and a half.
Yeah, it's a miracle to have done that. Like not since but like what? Like they did it one time faster in like the 1950s. Like it's a crazy miracle.
Yeah.
And they're just like, oh, six dead. Like, 100 years ago, they would be like, this is the demon. Like this is incredible.
Yeah, and I didn't read that entire FDA document,
sure,
but I was looking
sure.
over the section about the severe and non-severe adverse events. And a lot of it didn't see it. Like, you know, they have to report everything.
Sure.
And so, like, there's, like, stats for number of people who had, like...
A rash.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Or like pain in the site of vaccination.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, all right.
There's
that,
a little
all
bit
that
of
information
circle.
Is
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
You know, it's there. Anyway, I agree.
Yeah.
But we have issues. We have issues to deal with.
Oh, great.
I want to be a globalist. How do I get in?
God damn.
So
we're really doing this, huh?
Yeah.
We're really going to listen to Joe Rogan talk shit about people infinitely smarter than me.
I'm going to say this ahead of time. I tried to steer away from conversation about how fucked up they are.
Yes.
Because I think that's kind of boring and it's not really all that. Like, I would, if I were in a studio with Joe Rogan, I probably would be fucked up too.
Yeah.
And it's kind of low hanging fruit a little bit and it would become tiresome.
I think we just put a disclaimer up top. These guys are fucked up.
Yeah, exactly.
We know.
Yeah. And I think that other people living their lives, I don't think there's anything wrong with being fucked up.
No.
I do think that there's something probably wrong about Alex presenting himself the way he does and then being super fucked up with Rogan and talking nonsense.
Yeah.
But whatever. I don't really care that much.
Yeah.
I'm not a square. Whatever. Anyway. I'm it's not as good as when Alex was on Rogan's
show. Of course not.
Because Alex isn't really trying to impress.
Exactly.
As much as he is just trying to like solidify the bond between the two of them and try and get whatever he can out of it. But there is still a number of things that I think are important teachable moments.
Sure. I mean, Rogan in Alex's studio isn't fun because they're on more of an equal footing. Like, not in an equal footing, but Alex doesn't have to supplicate himself quite as much because when he
you
goes into
think.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah.
He really oh
well,
what a
why
weak,
don't we start?
What a whine. How dare you say you're an alpha?
Why don't we start and listen to this
oh,
alpha?
God.
InfoWars, the most banned network in the world.
Well, I got to tell you, I get bigger goosebumps with this guy on the air than when I've had Donald Trump on and movie stars. No, seriously. I've known you for 22 years, and you're a fun, really smart, amazing guy, and you've put up a lot of my crap. And he's the number one, not just podcaster, but talk show host in the world, Joe Rogan, my fellow Texan.
Alex Jones, thanks for having me.
Supplication.
Oh, boy.
Right out of the gate.
Oh, boy. Did he learn that from Stevie P's, that level of obsequiousness?
Yeah, it must have rubbed off.
Yeah. Over the years, you just learn how to compliment people if you get your balls rubbed by Stevie P's enough.
So there's a constant, consistent thing throughout this interview where Alex seems to want to hit a couple of points pretty hard.
Yeah.
One of them is, why did you move from LA?
Sure.
Why, like, how is Spotify?
Tell me everybody in LA is evil. Tell me Spotify is a great company to work with and they might be willing to pay me.
Yeah. Can you smooth things out with me and Spotify?
Yeah. Hey, they let me on your show on Spotify. Maybe they'll let my show on Spotify. Yeah.
And, you know, just a couple of other, like, pointed things run throughout.
Yeah.
And so Alex starts off with, hey, man, why'd you leave L.A.?
Mm-hmm.
I really loved Texas for so long. And I always was attached to L.A. because of the Comedy Store and because of business and just doing stand up there and podcasts there. But once they locked everything down, this was the logical place for me to move. And for me, it felt like I had a nice excuse to move here. And just like I had thought about moving here for a long time, but it didn't seem feasible. And then as soon as the lockdowns happened and then the riots and the looting, and I was like, I got to get the fuck out of L.A.
I don't believe that for a second.
Uh-uh.
It's almost certainly tax related.
Yep.
The $100 million deal.
I just got $100 million, and L.A. charges me a lot of money, it turns out.
And I understand that, you know, Joe would perform in L.A. and shit, but, like, I don't think he lived in the city. I don't think he lived anywhere where, let's say, protests were...
No, there were so many looters and rioters outside of Joe Rogan's neighborhood. Yeah. Recent 100 millionaire Joe Rogan's
I just don't buy it. I find this rings artificial and false. Mm-hmm. But it is probably about the best thing you could do as opposed to saying, like, I'm fucking loaded now.
Yeah. I don't need them anymore.
I used to be rich. Now I'm comically rich.
Yeah. I can be comically rich anywhere I want.
And it just so happens that Texas is the state where I can stay the most comically rich.
It does. I mean, it's either Texas or move to Miami, and I don't think he's going to Miami. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Alex also, in with his sort of Steve Pachenik-esque buttering, he's constantly asking Joe, like, why, what's it like to be the most famous person in the world? You were so successful early on in your career, all this stuff.
What's it like having the biggest dick anyone's ever seen? Right. Joe Rogan, what is it like?
More or less.
Yeah.
Someone said once, a friend of mine said that I'm the bridge between the meatheads and the potheads.
And oh, God.
I like to look at it that way.
Well, that was kind of my next angle and my next question. I mean, you've been doing podcasting over 10 years, right?
It's, 2009, so it's almost 11 years. It'll be 11 years in December.
And like it was right big now. Right away. I mean, you've been big right away. You've probably been...
No, it wasn't big at all in the beginning. Like, literally, no one was watching. It's part of the Comedy Store
documentary.
We were watching, Joe.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Little brother vibes. Oh,
this isn't the fucking Today Show. Good God.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you, you were successful early on despite your experiencing it.
Let me tell you about your experience.
I know it better. I was watching.
Yeah, I was here.
So 4 minutes in to this interview. 4 minutes. They've had some pleasantries, and it's like all just kind of like, oh, yeah, you're so great. Yeah. It's so great to have you here.
It's awesome.
They start smoking weed 4 minutes in.
On air?
Let's go back to that. That was my first question. How did you develop your worth ethic and drive?
Because I have some great tobacco.
Absolutely. I'll take a puff. Well, I'd be gay if I smoked your tobacco.
You can try to smoke my tobacco.
What did you just say?
Tobacco.
So they're smoking weed, and there was a meme that went around, or like a video that someone put together from the last time Alex was on Rogan, and they spliced together things to make it sound like Alex wanted to have sex with Joe.
Oh.
And sort of it went around on Twitter and stuff.
Oh.
And so Alex is constantly leaning into that
hoping
that someone else makes a video.
Right.
It's really desperate and very pathetic.
Great.
Yeah. It's obnoxious. He's just outrageously desperate to get a meme out of this.
Yeah.
I think that's what he wants more than even having Joe on, is like somebody in Joe's audience will make something that'll go viral.
Yeah.
That's kind of the goal.
I'm looking for 20,000 likes on something.
Yeah. And if you got to make fun of me, you got to make fun of me.
Hey.
Well, see, that's why people have really embraced me, because I love being made fun of.
Yes.
I don't get folks that don't like it. I love it.
No, you get a kick out of it.
There's a show he would love then. If Alex likes being made fun of, I have a podcast to recommend to him It's called fucking Knowledge Fight.
I kind of enjoy it. I don't think he's very serious when he says that.
No.
I kind of think that he has very thin skin.
Maybe
I might think
thinnest.
He has a hair trigger as well. Yes. I think he might react negatively when he receives any criticism whatsoever.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could be.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I could be wrong, though. Maybe he's an avid fan.
No. He does not like being made fun of, but he likes to say that he likes being made fun of.
Well, it makes him look cool.
He kind of likes being made fun of in ways that are profitable to him, though. Like, so if someone makes a meme that's poking fun at him and he gets a ton of people and a ton of attention and his name is all over the place, then he'll take it. I'll accept being made fun of for profit.
Right.
I will accept payment to be in the dunk tank.
Yes.
But I will not do it for fun.
Yeah. He's a sad clown.
Yes.
In many ways.
But you know who's not? Joe Rogan.
Joe Rogan is
the most famous.
He's a little bit of a sad clown.
He's the most famous person in the world. He is the Walter Cronkite of our times.
Oh, God, no.
When did you realize that you were in the zeitgeist? Because you were already in the zeitgeist of hit TV shows and UFC and, you know, big movies and, you know, the national champion
big
Taekwondo.
Movies.
I mean, you've had success since day one. You had to fight hard for it. But when did you realize, oh, my God, I'm like a real superstar, not of some just empty movie or an empty actor that reads off a teleprompter or a script? You get to be your own self and be the biggest. That's very rare.
The tobacco's kicking in. I don't know if I ever realized it. I'm not sure if I still realize it.
Come on. You got to like what? Because, I mean, I'm pretty super famous, too.
It's one of the reasons why, one of the reasons why I like pot is it makes me think about much more interesting things.
So, like, but I kind of respect that answer because it's a really embarrassing question.
It is.
And for Joe, as like a person, like the graceful, dignified way to respond to that is, I don't think about that too much.
Yeah.
Because to imagine that you do think about it is gross.
Yeah. Joe, I have a quick question. How often and strenuously do you sniff your own farts and believe them to be amazing? Mm-hmm. Could you just tell me real quick? Your farts don't stink, obviously, sir. Obviously. When did you first notice?
Well, I mean, like, what other answer could he give that doesn't make him look like a shithead?
I'm the fucking greatest!
Yeah.
I fucking did it!
Well, I think it was about July 2014 that I realized that I was the king of the world.
It was at the Great Pothead Meathead Summit of 2016.
Yeah.
Whenever I brought them together.
Yeah. No one thought that I could reach detente between the two, but much like Steve Pachenik solving all the world conflicts, I solved the meathead jock pothead conflict.
It turns out everybody likes doing nothing sometimes.
So Alex tried to destroy Joe when Joe said that he couldn't be on his show. As this goes,
yeah,
a couple times back when Alex was on, he lied to Joe's face about Sandy Hook.
He did do that.
Yes.
Yeah.
And apparently Joe found out about this, and it was right around when a lot of attention was going on with the Sandy Hook suit. Mm-hmm. Might have been around the time Alex threatened to murder the opposing counsel, or, I'm sorry, put out $1 million hit.
Wow. What's $1 million between friends?
Sure.
Yeah.
So Joe said that Alex couldn't be on his show for the time being until that was resolved.
Alex
said that Joe was a sneaky snake that threatened to destroy him, started talking about his children
kill
on
his
air.
Kids, yeah.
He didn't threaten to kill his kids,
that's
but
true.
He was talking about them in a way that is very inappropriate.
Not happy
for
with
public
it.
Discussion.
No.
Nah, Alex kind of wants to say sorry about all that.
Okay.
Sure. Well, I'm going to mea culpa something before we get into the hardcore issues here with you tonight. We appreciate you being here, Joe. And that's that I've kind of gotten whacked out under all the pressure, all the attacks. The opposite
we've
of fame,
been over this so many times.
The opposite
man.
Of fame, though. It's like being the villain is you almost start becoming the villain. But I just want to say the way you helped
can.
Me out. High Road, that was a big help.
Well, we just needed
high
to talk.
Road. Get
you know,
the fuck
you and I have been friends
here.
For a long time, and I think that's... It's just it's really a microcosm of what is happening online with people is that they're not talking to each other.
No, it's not. It is not a microcosm of what's going on with social media.
No,
and people
no.
not communicating with each other.
Mm-mm.
It's very much a case of Alex trying to ride your coattails.
You know, this
embarrassingly.
This is one of those things where I remember this quote from Sinbad, and I will till the day I die.
The sailor or the comedian?
The comedian.
Okay.
Comics are funnier when they ride the bus.
Mm.
Just that, like, simple, like, you have no fucking clue what you're talking about, you 100 millionaire dumbass.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? What's going on online right now?
Yeah.
Your experience is stupid. Yeah.
Sure. And like, Joe, I don't know what the fuck he thinks Alex does for a living. Like, I don't know. Does he not know what Alex's show is about?
He's never
does
watched he imagine it. He doesn't have the time.
Does he imagine that Alex is talking about, like, real conspiracies still?
Yeah,
does
totally.
Because... he can't possibly know the horrible things Alex said about him for days.
Yeah, it's quite a bit.
It's not just they needed to talk. Alex was turning their fight into content.
Yeah, but
he was monetizing fighting between the two of them.
Yeah, if you were Joe's friend, wouldn't you be like, hey, I know you probably don't have time to see InfoWars, but I saw this online and it's this whole long series of things that Joe said or that Alex said directly about you. Yeah. You should watch this and remember it forever.
Let's say that you're a friend of mine and we have a falling out, and like maybe you're a high profile person too.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have the instinct to threaten to destroy you for attention on air.
Yeah.
That's kind of that's a bad person.
Yeah. If I started my own show, like we have a falling out and I start my own show, and then all of a sudden you just start going on, I'm going to kill Jordan rants. One. Your show would become far more popular.
Sneaky Snake Jordan.
And two, I would be very offended, Dan.
Yeah.
That would hurt my feelings.
It's nonsense. Oh, yeah. We just needed to talk.
Yeah.
Anyway, Alex carries on this charade that, like, he actually knows anything about what he's talking about. And in this clip, we kind of get the first real meaty thing that I think happens. And that is, like, a full demonstration of why Joe Rogan cannot do the things he's doing.
When I get into issues, when I'm being serious, because you can differ on my interpretation, but if I'm saying I've got a clip or I've got something, I've got it.
Well, that's why I wanted to clarify
that
on the podcast really clearly. And I think we accomplished
You did a great
that.
Job. By the way, I felt terrible that night. You pat him on the back. And you said, this will be the best one. You just got proven right. I'm surprised. Almost everything you said was accurate. I thought a few things would be a mistake. And you were damn right. My buddy Pat Riley was there and he said, that was your best podcast with Joe ever. I went home depressed.
This is why Joe is not equipped to do the job that he's assigned for himself. Joe didn't fact-check Alex, but he gave just enough of the appearance of doing so to rationalize continuing his association with him. Joe could have, and should have, completely destroyed Alex's career on that podcast, but he didn't have the ammo that he needed to take that shot, and because he didn't, now that podcast gets to be pointed to as a time when Alex's beliefs were really put to the test, and he was found to be correct.
Yep.
It's just a pathetic display from all parties, and I find it difficult to imagine that Joe doesn't have some awareness of what he's doing. And here's what makes me the most convinced of that. On that last podcast that they did, Alex presented Joe with information that he was previously unaware of. The Rockefeller Foundation had a public plan called Operation Lockstep that is identical to the current COVID-19 response. According to Alex, everything that's happening now was planned 10 years ago by these evil globalists, and the documents are easily accessible to prove it. I do not believe that a sincere person would not finish the podcast and then immediately, or at their first opportunity, check that claim. Alex can either be right or wrong. If he's wrong, your friend is a liar, and he's using your platform to spread misinformation that's going to get people killed, and you're complicit in it. If he's right, there's a very easily provable conspiracy to kill off the population using the illusion of an outbreak, and it seems like knowing that for certain would be pretty important. The only thing that really makes sense here is if Joe is treating Alex like Eddie Bravo. It's fun to talk to him about the crazy bullshit he believes, but there's literally no reason to take any of it seriously or think about it for a second outside of his presence. Joe's not going to dig into whether the Earth is flat after hanging out with Eddie, and he's not going to research the fake Operation Lockstep after hanging out with Alex because he takes them equally seriously. Joe probably thinks that what he's doing is fine and innocent enough, but he's doing a lot of damage and doing a bad job while pretending to fact-check Alex.
Yeah.
If you just want to shoot the shit with your friend, fine. Once you step into the game of, like, validating his conspiracies and pretending that you're doing some kind of rigor or due diligence on this, you're giving Alex all the carte blanche to your audience that he needs.
Mm-hmm.
You're basically selling your audience to him.
Yeah. You can't. Like, the first sentence he said is just like, we can differ on interpretation, and it's like, on some things you can, but there are things that are or are not. It's not, everything is not differable on interpretation. And then second, you always have the documents. Why? Why would you say that?
Mm-hmm.
Why would you say he always has the documents?
Well, because it's a joke.
Ugh.
Yeah.
I hate it.
Yeah, no, it's sad.
It's pathetic.
So, Alex is a gift for Joe. Not only the gift of ass-kissery and nonsense, he also has physical gifts.
Okay.
you've given me a lot of great UFC tickets, been really nice to me for 20 plus years, and I've never really gotten you anything. And I've seen people give you gifts on the show, usually some PR thing that they're selling. I don't own any stock in this. It's a great rifle. I really enjoy it. This is something where you can go get 4 or 5 grizzly bears.
So Texas.
Grizzly bears at the same time.
What are these rounds?
Guys, bring the rifle in here. So this is your gift, along with that box of cigars.
Thank you very much.
So you got him cigars and a rifle. It's just like a parody of masculinity.
Yeah. That's really... That's really bad.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a little bit too on the nose in a movie. I would be like, okay, guys, we get it. They're supposedly men.
Your bros.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah, this is a man cave. I gotcha. All right.
Here's where it gets even worse.
Dial it back.
Here's where it gets even worse. Now, okay. Remember, they're smoking weed and drinking booze.
And drinking booze.
And he has just gifted Joe a rifle.
Right.
And then Alex says this.
It's really wild. When you
Joe, pick up the rifle and trot it out a little bit. I mean, don't shoot it.
Try it out.
You know what I mean? Just check it out.
Let's just put it away. I know what a rifle is. I got a bunch of them.
All right.
How Texas is this?
That is the right response.
Yeah,
put it away.
Yeah, that's a good response. Yeah. I was very afraid because generally whatever InfoWars, hey, pick up that rifle is a, of course I'll pick up that rifle.
Alex Jones, the pinnacle of gun safety, just the guy who loves the Second Amendment and responsible gun ownership. Hey, we're stoned.
Don't shoot it. Yeah. Don't shoot it.
Hey, why don't you test out that rifle?
Test it out. Give it a go. Give it a go inside. Don't shoot it, though.
Right.
Just swing it around.
Wow.
Point it at your friends.
So they get to talking about sort of meds and medication. Mm-hmm. And Joe knows some people who have mixed drugs with meds, and it's had a bad response.
Uh-oh.
Some side effects. There's different people with different side effects, you know, and some
and,
people
and
are
mixing it with things.
And cocaine. You know, there's a lot of people that say that mixing it with cocaine turns you psychotic. And
or
Phil
if
Hartman's
you drink, say, Xanax, it's not...
It's terrible for you, and a lot of people do it. It's terrible for you. They say, don't drink on this. People are like, yeah, okay. And they drink on it.
Right. The problem isn't the meds, though.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
the coke.
Yeah, that's the one. It's the inverse of what you think is, yeah. I can't do my coke on these meds. No, you're, sir? Sir, let me back you up one step.
That is what he seems to be saying.
It does kind of seem to be that.
Well, I can't stop doing coke.
I've been freebasing for 10 years now, and just because you want me to take this med, oh, my cholesterol's high.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Mixing booze and Xanax is really dangerous, so people who are on Xanax... who actually use it as prescribed.
It's a little bit like he's saying, no, I'm on booze. I'm taking Xanax, okay? That's my recreation.
It's very strange. Also very strange to hear that Joe's position on marijuana is evolving a little bit. And I think that's probably good because I think from everything I could tell, there is a little bit of a cartoonish pro-marijuana.
Some cartoonish carte blanche of permissiveness to...
Yeah. Like, it's all good. Nothing bad can ever come of... I think that was kind of a position he may have presented earlier on.
It's not addictive
days.
And you blow the smoke in your 4-year-old's face. It's good stuff. Move on.
He's now evolved a little bit into a position where it seems like he is aware that sometimes it can have negative outcomes.
You know, I've been more and more open over the last few years, especially to recognizing that pot's not always safe. And I don't think it's a good idea to tell everybody it's always safe.
Well, they made it so strong that it's definitely been connected to increases in schizophrenia. I have known.
But I don't know if it's from the a potency perspective. I think maybe it's always happened and we just didn't recognize it because it wasn't legal.
I know two people personally who were normal and started smoking a lot of pot and went crazy.
I do as well. Including edibles. I know people that...
Two of them worked here. One of them started thinking that everyone was reptiles. That's David Icke's thing. We weren't just saying that.
I got bad news for you. If those people worked at InfoWars previously, they weren't normal. they weren't starting from a really grounded place, and then they started smoking weed.
Might
and
as well have just been like, they started listening to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the sign that this person had lost it is that they thought everyone was reptiles, when in reality everyone is demons.
Interdimensional demons, duh.
Yeah,
what are you high?
That's the difference between mental health and losing it. Is do you think people are reptiles or do you think they're interdimensional demons?
You know what? I don't understand why people would listen to this. I don't understand why people would listen to two people have the same dumb thoughts you could already have at home.
Oh.
You know?
No, totally.
Like this is dumb as terrible. Hell. Like, yeah. I have thoughts that you can think of at home, but it's interesting because you have knowledge and research and shit.
Well,
not we're both just being like, hey, I half remember the content of this thing that I might have read.
One of the reasons I ultimately decided to do this episode was because I'm looking forward to Monday, and we have the trip to DC for the episode on Monday.
Sure.
I don't know when we'll have time to get to the Rogan episode, if not now.
Of course.
And then the other more motivating factor was that it is something that people are curious about. People are curious about, like, a 4-hour fucking episode. With
Unreal.
Rogan, and no one should have to listen to that.
No one.
It's so long.
It's mean.
There were long stretches where I was listening to this, and I'm just like, I don't care. No, because there are parts that are just like, okay, this is just a stupid conversation. It's not really relevant.
Yeah.
It's not that entertaining. Just talking about, like, a fun time you all had or something. Mm-hmm. Like, Joe Rogan does, like, 10 minutes about how great Joey Diaz is as a comedian.
I'm he is great.
Whatever. I don't care. If I wanted that, I'd listen to Rogan's podcast where he talks about how great Joey Diaz is.
I would listen to Rogan's podcast. Yeah. Yes.
Just, like, there's so much that is, like, skip. And so I'll save people the time. I'll listen to it for you.
Thank you.
And we can just listen to the parts that are interesting. Like finding out that two of Alex's employees got into the grass.
Of course.
And then they lost their minds.
Right.
Also, Alex thinks that he's interviewing Joe, kinda.
Uh-huh.
But the tables turn.
Uh-oh.
I talk about interdimensional things. That's what the globalists believe in.
Have you ever had an interdimensional experience?
Here we go.
Well, I'm interviewing Joe Rogan today.
Have you? Why are we interviewing each other, man?
No. We're not. I just want to get all the cool stuff out.
Let's just talk.
Okay, I'll tell you. So
he did not want to answer that question. He wanted to dodge that. Have you ever had an interdimensional experience?
Explain to me how that question can blow you away. If it's like, interdimensional. I talk about interdimensional stuff. Of course, that's what the globalists believe. Have you ever had one? Because if I say yes, then I would have to admit that I also believe in that shit, and that's kind of probably going
to
sound bad.
And it sounds silly for me to say that's what the globalists believe if I've experienced it and I know it's real as well.
Exactly. It kind of makes me look like an idiot.
But then if I say no, then the globalists are just a bunch of weirdos who have beliefs that aren't true.
Yep.
What kind of power is there in that?
Not a lot.
Yeah, kind of a trap.
Okay.
So Alex doesn't really answer, but then he does say this.
I don't want to make this about me, but I can actually shift into a psychic awareness.
A psychic awareness?
With a higher level.
How well do you think you'd do at rock, paper, scissors?
You know, we can joke about that. Probably pretty good.
They do not test this. They do not test this, although I wish they did.
Why wouldn't you immediately be like, okay, rock, paper, scissors?
Yeah, you better win every time.
Exactly.
I'll give you a minute to
shift into your psychic state.
And then you better win or else you're full of shit.
That is huge. I don't have to do any voices vibe out of this guy.
Yes.
Yeah.
I can, I don't know about interdimensional experiences, but I can shift into a psychic state. What?
Wouldn't that be an interdimensional experience?
Maybe.
I would hope so.
Anyway, Alex has a good example of when he has done this in the past.
Okay.
No, but I know how to, you know, let's just say I wouldn't call it the exaggeration. It accelerated to the next power where they claim it's like astral projection or remote viewing.
Right.
But I can't control it. I've had a lot of dreams that come exactly true later. And I've called a lot of things. Like 2 months before 9/11, I said they're going to blow up the World Trade Center and blame it on Bin Laden.
What?
People said, how did you dream about it? Kept having a recurring dream.
What?
Yeah.
Did you talk about this?
On air, yeah. There's videos of it, yeah.
No.
Yeah. So I can't really control it.
Holy shit.
So that's amazing, but that's only one data point.
It's not amazing.
No, it's not. We've talked about, we did a whole episode about why it's not amazing.
We did a whole episode.
But like, that's just one piece of data. What if he had a second dream that came true?
Okay.
Kept having this recurring dream of a guy in a pink and green striped sweater.
Mm-hmm.
When I walk around the side of a building, attacking me with like a club.
It's Bill Gates.
And
was he wearing one of those Dallas Mr. Rogers sweaters?
And we used to drive into town. I was like 15, but with older kids to get alcohol. You had to drive into downtown Dallas to get alcohol and weed. We go to like little crack houses, but we were buying weed at them. And then I was going around the side of one of these buildings, and it was a white crackhead, and he tried to attack me, and I'd have the exact dream a whole bunch of times and missed when he tried to club me in the head. So it was like my psychic understanding to get past that point. Happened like 2 months later. I kept having the dream of this guy, and I'm all of a sudden walking around the side of this house to buy some weed. I wasn't even a big weed guy, but we're driving out to get for girls, and this guy tries to club me in the head, a crackhead, and it's the same guy from the dream.
Jesus Christ.
So you have those dreams.
So you've had two of those, two big ones. You've had a lot of them?
Other ones, yeah.
A lot of them.
Wow.
These are the two examples that he uses, though.
Holy shit.
So I guess maybe that was like he'd seen Nightmare on Elm Street.
I guess.
Like
that's so bullshit. Fuck. Yeah. Don't. I have one rule. Don't ever tell anybody about your dreams unless it's a sex dream with someone interesting. Mm-hmm. No one else. No one cares about anything else.
Yeah, I'm positive that I could come up with some stories of dreams I had that I could make match things that happened later.
Yeah.
When I anybody.
And you can fudge the details because it's a dream.
Right.
You don't perfectly remember
how
it.
How can you prove any of this?
Fuck off.
Yeah. So. This is Alex gets back to the 9/11 prediction, and he says something that I actually think is a real problem.
Well, there was a 2-hour thing I did in July 25th, 2001.
I
went ahead and went on air and said they're going to blow up the World Trade Center, blame on the CIA, Bin Laden, and then launch all these wars. And I said, oh, I just got this from analysis and information, but I kept having the dream of the towers smoking and all the rest of it.
So what I want to point out and take issue with here is that Alex admits that he lied about what the information source was.
Yeah.
He is saying, I said that it was based on analysis, but really it was the product of a prophetic dream that
right.
I had.
Right.
Because he knew in 2000 that he could not say, I had a dream about this.
That would be very, very silly.
And
even.
I would suggest that if this is all true, and Alex is being, he's reporting this accurately, then what happened was he was listening to a ton of Bill Cooper and Patriot-ass radio back then, and at that point in time, it seeped into his subconscious. Bill Cooper was saying very similar things, and that's why he was dreaming about it.
Yeah,
that's and you combine that with the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center, the feelings like Bin Laden was somebody who was known at the time.
Well, and he did say he was going to bomb the World Trade Center.
There's that.
He was very explicit about it, too, like a long time in advance.
Right. So like Alex's dreams about this are more likely the product of influences that he had.
Sure.
And then he got on air and pretended that he was some kind of expert, had some analysis. And that's kind of a microcosm of his career.
Yeah.
Pretending that he has information that he's just coming up with out of his fantasies.
Yeah, I would say that what he's done is invalidate any time he's ever said that he predicted 9/11 as being like a result of work.
Yeah.
No, so
at best, you had a dream.
You had a dream. Yeah. Right. So then I will. So then if you could, your entire career is based on a lie, unless you are selling yourself as a pure psychic who can predict things as opposed to analyze them.
And
in any
it
way.
Calls into question other times that he said he's analyzed things or he has information. Is he actually just lying about
just
some sort
dream?
Of a dream?
Yeah.
How seriously should you take any information that he provides if he was willing to pass off a prediction about a terrorist attack as an analysis when it was actually a dream?
Well, he did say Chicago was going to be nuked. How are we doing?
We're fine.
Oh,
but he might have had a dream.
Oh, shit.
I
well, we might
dream.
Still be fucked.
But he had a dream.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So, look, this is an interview.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to get down to the nitty-gritty. They're going to get down and find out what the truth is, unless Joe doesn't want to have an interview.
Okay.
So what got you into comedy?
Oh, Alex, this is so forced. What got me into comedy?
It is not forced.
It is.
It's
You're
pretty
asking
forced.
Me questions like we're doing an interview.
No, because I actually,
but we're,
I can talk plenty. Look out. No, I
no,
did write these
just
questions
talk.
Down.
Well, you don't
I
have
did
to,
write these
you don't
questions
have to follow those.
If
it's
you were magically made ruler of the world,
oh, Jesus,
what are three things you would do to change the world as it is? Alex Jones never does this. I'm being different.
I understand.
I don't think the two of them are working on the exact same page here. I think Alex is kind of wanting to get something, and Joe just wants to have a conversation.
Is Joe funny anymore?
He's charismatic.
Yeah, I mean, I thought I would expect he would go for a joke every now and again.
I think he comes off pretty well.
Okay.
At least decent.
Okay.
I think he says a number of really stupid things.
Sure.
But at the same time, like, watching this, I was thinking, like, I could probably hang out with Rogan.
Wow.
I could probably get along with him as long as we didn't get into these sorts of topics.
Sure.
I think it might be fine. And as long as it wasn't, like, a show.
I mean,
I wouldn't want to do, like, I wouldn't want to be on his show.
Yeah.
But just hanging out socially, having a conversation, I think he could probably be a lot of fun.
Well, I mean, yeah, we've definitely hung out and had social conversations in green rooms with far worse people.
No, totally. And the way that he's able to, like, Alex, you're forcing it. Why are you asking a question? Yeah, yeah. When did I get into comedy?
Right.
Like, yeah, that's an indication, at least on some level, that he's willing to have, you know, a conversation that's not boring.
That's true.
So, but in terms of him being funny, I'm not 100% sure.
Okay.
But Alex thinks he's funny.
How about this? Kill, fuck, or fight?
Oh, who?
Bill Gates.
Well, I don't want to kill him.
So you're going to fuck him.
And I don't want to fight him. I don't want to hurt him. It'd probably be the most gentle if I fuck him. Right?
To
keep him alive? No, that's rude. That and then you're just making a mockery of it.
So you want a personal moment with Bill Gates?
I think,
you know, I'm trying to feed the memes right now.
I know.
So desperate.
Wow. That's,
so desperate
that's
to try
bad.
And get a meme going.
That's really bad.
Yeah.
That's kind of heart wrenching, honestly.
Yeah, it's cringy.
It's very cringy.
Yeah.
Especially since he's trying to, it seems like he's getting so much mileage out of just saying fuck. Just like kill, fuck, fight.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you want him to say that. It's like a Family Feud question. Where it's like, you want grandma to say tits. We know it.
Yeah. There's a little bit of a problem, too, in that, like, Joe doesn't seem to hate Bill Gates, whereas Alex claims to know that he runs the world and wants to kill everyone.
Sure, there is
and
that.
And Alex doesn't challenge Joe on his non-hatred of Bill Gates, which seems weird, considering everything Alex says about Bill Gates all the time, but...
I would have said, you know, he's one of the 12.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you have said that?
Maybe. Maybe he's middle management. Who knows?
He could be middle management. That's true.
When Alex was on Joe's podcast last, it was a disgraceful showing.
Mm-hmm.
There were just tons and tons of things that were factually inaccurate, emotionally inaccurate.
Manipulative at the very least.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, we did our episode about it, and if anybody's interested, they can find cataloging of them there.
Mm-hmm.
But Joe seems to think that people were desperate to find something that Alex was wrong about.
Let's go ahead and play.
Well, it's Bill Gates himself saying that the vaccine made 80% of the people ill, which is exactly what you said on the podcast. And people were complaining, and they were angry. They were trying to find something that you said that was wrong.
It was so hard.
Because we basically checked everything you said,
struggling.
And all of it proved to be accurate. So then we got to this part where you said 80% of the people that took the vaccine got sick. And people were like, he's spreading anti-vaccine conspiracy theories. So I said, okay, listen. Here's the video.
We're not desperate to find things that Alex is wrong about.
It was not a struggle, really.
No.
It's kind of a Google search, honestly.
Kind of an exhausting.
It's a bit of a Google search.
It was an exhausting cataloging of things that he was wrong about that took for fucking ever. But Joe, I don't understand how he can possibly not recognize that Alex was lying. Like, that Project Lockstep, Operation Lockstep thing is like so glaring that he should never talk to Alex ever again. But he seems to think that everybody was so desperate to find one thing, one place where Alex didn't dot his I or cross his T.
See, this is a struggle because it does seem like he doesn't take Alex seriously.
But
so
he
how
does.
Can you also say that? You know?
That's the conflict that I have. Like, he doesn't take this information seriously.
Yeah.
Obviously.
So how can you say that it's proven and then not react to it, really, like it's an issue?
How can you go out of your way to rationalize Alex and sell him to your audience while at the same time not taking a step and seeing if his fucking conspiracy about the plan to destroy everyone in the present using COVID-19 has any credence to it? How could you be that not curious if you're willing to vouch for him?
How could you believe that that stuff has been proven and not use five of your $100 million to do something about it? If you believe what Alex is saying, then the elites are killing all of us, murdering us all, and you have $100 million.
You should buy InfoWars.
You could do something about it.
Yeah.
How do you not make that just, I'm just a regular old guy just being trampled under the boot of the machine. Yeah, fuck you.
Well, I don't know what his answer to that would be. And I don't understand how he can have this completely bizarre relationship with Alex.
Yeah, it's weird.
It doesn't make any sense.
No.
But I think one of the ways that he's able to play it publicly is to be like, yeah, everyone's just mad about things that you say because you're saying them.
Mm.
They're too attached to the messenger.
Sure.
People get trapped into the messenger. They get trapped into the messenger instead of listening to the information. A fucking moron might have something important to say. You never know. When someone is an idiot, not you, but if someone's an idiot at most things and they come to you with one fact, someone could be a fucking liar.
Broken clocks are
all the time. Yeah. But then they come to you with one fact that they saw on TV and you're like, get the fuck out of here. That's where crying wolf comes from, right?
Absolutely.
Everybody knows that.
A couple of
Did you learn the wrong lesson from the very story you just referenced?
Yeah. The lesson supposed to be, like, in that story is that when you cry wolf a bunch of times and there is no wolf, people will not believe you when you cry
eventually
wolf and there is
eaten.
A wolf. The lesson of that story isn't that the people who stopped believing someone who constantly lied about there being a wolf were wrong to not believe him the last time.
Mm-hmm.
That's a completely bizarre interpretation of that story. The takeaway is supposed to be that if you're a liar and the lies you're telling affect other people, you can cause serious damage to people with your lies because the time you're telling the truth about a threat, they might not believe you.
Uh-huh.
Alex is kind of the boy who cried wolf, except in his version, there still isn't a wolf at the end. He's just continuing to lie. And the boy is getting rich selling anti-wolf pills to a particularly gullible set of people in town.
Yeah, there's an issue there.
Also, this is a critically important point. Joe is saying that people cannot hear the things Alex says and evaluate them on their merits because they're caught up in the messenger. They hate Alex, so he must be wrong about everything. This is exactly the problem with how Joe engages with Alex, just in the reverse. It's Joe who's completely caught up on the messenger and refuses to accept the possibility that Alex is a malignant narcissist who is not his friend. I hate Alex Jones more than most people, and I can easily separate my feelings about how repulsive he is from whether or not specific claims he makes are based in reality. It's not a difficult exercise, because I care, because I believe that there's a reason that this matters. For all Joe's talk about ideas and good ideas beating bad ideas, he doesn't think any of this shit he's talking about matters. He's trapped by the illusion in his head that he's created where Alex is a good guy who means well, which he only believes because the two of them have gotten fucked up together a couple times and said offensive things to each other, which is bonding, I guess.
Yeah.
And Alex gave him a rifle.
Cigars, too.
I challenge Joe to take his own advice and separate the messenger from the message. Start with Operation Lockstep and go from there, and consider the possibility that this person you insist is your friend is actually a dangerous liar.
Yeah, I do. I mean, to your point, yeah. Okay, Joe, then do you watch, like, the other conservative news networks? Whenever they say all that bullshit, do you go, well, obviously I must believe them because it's true? That's the only, because they're not the, no, that's so fucked up. He's absolutely tied to the, to just, I will defend Alex no matter what.
Yeah. Yeah, it's.
It sucks.
Well, I mean, it kind of sucks, but it also is really gaslighty to say that people who, like, disagree can't possibly have substance-based reasons for disagreeing. We just hate Alex
Jones. It's all about your feelings. It's always...
He's creating this archetype of, like, all criticism is coming from SJW snowflakes who are all mad because Alex Jones is too manly or something.
Sure.
And then, like, that's so boring. You're like trafficking in this like fetishization of ideas, and that's the idea you have.
Well, what it is,
we've done 500 something episodes of this podcast about substance that's wrong with Alex Jones.
Yeah.
It's not, I'm not just mad at him.
Yeah.
We would have stopped a long time ago if I was just mad at him.
Yeah.
It's such bullshit, Joe.
It's just like with Alex's fears of, and then being like on the other side, and he wants those things to happen. It's what he's afraid of is the things that he desires. In the same way, Joe is what he's really expressing is, I react to things based on how I feel. So I assume that others react to things based on how they feel. I can't imagine them breaking free of the mold that I exist in, because obviously, if I have $100 million, the things I think are important. Mm-hmm. They're not just feelings that I have or fucking fake prophetic ass dreams that I have. That must be where their criticism comes from as well.
Yeah. And I mean, Joe even gets into this kind of thing a little bit later. Here, I'll even go to this. I'll jump forward a little bit because it's really relevant. Mm-hmm. I'll go to this clip here because he's talking about like how people shape their ideas. Mm-hmm. And I think that this might be how he has.
Right.
Or it feels like projecting.
This is the thing. It's like you're allowed to have other ideas, but the whole idea of who you are and what life is mostly shaped by what you think is going to give you the least resistance from the people that are around you.
But that's what liberals I always liked was the fact that they were open and free and believe in speech. And even though I didn't agree with them on some points, they agree with my overall freedom.
I'm so high, I don't even know what I just said.
You said something really smart.
Joe, I agree.
I'm not a bullshitter.
So I know that Joe's discounting his own point because he's all high and shit, mm-hmm. but the presumption that you mold your identity by that which ideas, these ideas that'll cause the least tension with the people around you, mm-hmm. that's not how everyone lives.
No.
That's not a universal experience. A lot of times your personality is formed by conflict. It's formed by tension with groups that you don't fit in with, having mm-hmm. to find new people that you get along with better because, yeah, you know, like that's nonsensical.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't handle this. I get it. There's ideas and you can look at things from a different way, but we also have to exist in a world where some things are and some things are not. Mm-hmm. Everything is not open to interpretation.
No.
It just can't be. Otherwise, we get places where it's like, we think there's voter fraud, so there was. No, things at a certain point, something is or is not. We can't live in no, that's just how I interpret things. Like, that's just not how we can share a universe.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard.
Yeah.
But I will say that they're modeling it for us here with Alex and Joe. They're two.
That's why it's so shitty.
They're two completely different people mm-hmm. and they're getting along. Mm-hmm. They voted for different people.
Uh-oh.
Did you know that Rogan didn't vote for Trump?
What?
Listen, I voted for Joe Jorgensen. I voted for the libertarian because I think we should probably at least, I'm voting out of California. So I'm like, we should support third party candidates because that's one of the solutions.
I'd love to grill him on Jorgensen's positions.
Oh, my God.
I would love.
I want to slap him so bad.
I kind of.
How fucking dare you?
I mean, I guess it doesn't really matter since it's California.
Yeah,
but like,
yeah.
I would love to see how much he knows about Joe Jorgensen.
Totally. That's just some fake ass like. I don't agree with what Trump does and I don't like the way he does it. But listen, I can't support the Democrats because I'm an iconoclast. I'm Joe fucking Rogan. You don't know shit.
I would have voted Democrat if they got Tulsi Gabbard.
Yeah, right. Fuck off. You right. Fucking screw you.
So, again, I often feel like we're going to get hit with the DMCA complaint mm-hmm. and have like copyright. Claims put on our episodes.
It's big in Cyberpunk 2077.
Is that right?
People are saying that you have to turn DMCA music off, otherwise the Twitch will kick you off. So
oh,
it's
no.
Important. You'll get kicked off places.
But we're fine.
Oh, are we?
So again, thanks for watching, and back to this exclusive in-depth Joe Rogan interview, which is free to air. All you can re-upload it. You can clip it out. You can make memes out of it. It's all copyright free. The Alex Jones Show. And everything we do at InfoWars.com.
See, this is the double-edged sword of his desperation for memeing.
It is a little bit.
Is that he has to give blanket permission to people yep. like us to do this. So I guess we're safe.
All right, buddy.
Yeah. So that was from a little commercial that Alex inserted in.
Of course.
Commercials.
Of course he did. Why wouldn't he? You got to make money.
Yeah. I don't actually even remember what this is about, this next clip.
I doubt they do either.
Oh, no, now I remember. So they're talking about Joe's dog and how great this golden retriever is.
Oh, my God. Is Alex going to kill his dog on air?
I was worried about that.
Okay, good.
The rifle is right there.
I know. He's swinging it around. Yeah.
No, the dog isn't there. But they talk about how great Joe's dog is.
Uh-huh.
And the dog smiles and loves Joe. And
sure.
Alex gets mad because he starts thinking about how, like, you know, some animal psychologists will say, like, what you think of as happiness in an animal isn't always happiness. Like right. A smile on a dog right. isn't necessarily happiness in the right, same way right, right. it is for yeah. humans. Alex gets kind of mad about this.
That is a microcosm of his relationship to animals is his relationship to people. I don't understand why you don't think me.
You're all nature, none of it's nurture. Well, but then they say they are up here, though. They have souls. They have minds. They have decisions. Just you don't.
He's talking about like the elites yeah. of psychiatry yeah, and yeah, what yeah, have yeah. you.
And it's an ultimate. They're in the ruling class. Hell-Ronnie. We're in the lower class. Elitism. What existed before the Germans and then in modern psychiatry and psychology 200 years ago. And so that's what I'm coming at here is it doesn't mean that the things they've created, the lists they've made aren't real human traits. But it's really a cult, a guild blocking us from the larger issue because your dog is magic. Your dog does have a soul. It does have an energy. It is smiling. You are interfacing. Dogs are psychic buffers, way more psychic than we are. And so what I'm saying is your dog is the example of what humanity needs to go towards instead of somebody like Bill Gates.
Yeah, we should be less like Bill Gates and more like Rogan's dog.
Jesus.
It's meaningful. It's just, meaningful stuff.
Just scream out, I don't want to learn. That. How dare they say something different than me?
Well, like, I'm not threatened by someone telling me that my cat smiling doesn't mean she's happy.
Oh, shit. What is it? What does it mean? The next question.
I'm not threatened by the idea that her purring isn't always, like, showing love or happiness.
How can I make it better?
Right. And I also don't question the bond that we have. Like, I'm not tied up in...
Nope. If a psychiatrist said that the cat doesn't feel everything you think it's feeling all the time, that's because you don't have a soul,
I'm
Dan.
Not invested in projecting my feelings onto my pet friend.
Yeah.
I don't understand why people... I don't know. I don't care.
Well, I mean, it's a thing.
So, Joe has been pretty shitty so far about the idea that people have valid criticism
right.
about Alex.
Right, right, right.
And in this next clip, I think this is, like, I really resent this.
Listen, Alex, you got to think of what it's like to be a 23-year-old kid who is friends with a bunch of other 23-year-old kids that espouse a very rigid ideology. And when someone
yeah.
deviates from this ideology and says, maybe the guy's not a bad guy. Maybe he had like a psychotic moment. Maybe he had a bad time. Maybe he believed it because he's seen so much bullshit. He's seen so many lies. And maybe he went crazy because he's
on
his own.
I've been crazy.
But maybe he went crazy because he's on his own and because nobody wants to stand up and say, hey, he's right about a lot of shit.
So he seems like the thing that he's saying is like psychotic is like Sandy Hook stuff,
yeah.
you know, but like what Joe is presenting is this idea that like the only people who are really critiquing Alex are 23-year-olds who are socially uncomfortable with the fear that they have of saying, hey, maybe Alex is right about something.
Yeah,
that's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very frustrating and angering and almost suggests a sort of distance from what people really live that could only really come about through $100 million.
And it's straw man techniques in terms of like, this is why people have a problem with you. It's because all their 23-year-old friends are in a rigid Antifa ideology.
It's crazy how I'm not even going to mention that maybe people of color or women might have critiques of you. It's actually 23-year-old men
who are scared of hurting their friends' feelings.
Yeah.
By saying, fuck you, Alex has some good points.
It's all those non-alpha men who aren't carrying a gun right now and smoking cigars and whining about how people don't respect everything that we believe without questioning us, like alphas do.
And the real problem is that Alex got left out in the wilderness.
Oh, God.
Everyone left him alone.
That's the real problem.
Even if you're wrong, rather, about some things,
I meant well.
You're a human being and your perspective is valuable. And one of the reasons why you were wrong about such things is because you were abandoned. There were so many people that didn't want to hitch their car up to your train because they were scared. They would get caught in the 9/11 conspiracy and the Bohemian Grove conspiracy and the fucking Bilderberg conspiracy. There was so many different things that led people down uncomfortable moments and uncomfortable conversations. They didn't want to be a part of it. So they just left you alone. And when people get abandoned by all of the other people around them that may possibly have an inkling that you're correct, you start going fucking crazy.
Yeah.
That look on your face was amazing.
I'm so fucking mad. I'm so mad at that. Okay, fine. I get it. We've all seen Good Will Hunting. Mm-hmm. You know, it's great to give the pep talk speech.
Sure.
But, you know, that was fucking Matt Damon as like a underappreciated. This is like giving that same pep talk speech to John Wayne Gacy and being like, look, a lot of people just don't understand why you're doing what you're doing, man. But they're just not ready to challenge themselves.
I disagree. Here's what I think.
Mm-hmm.
It would be like John Wayne Gacy having killed all those people.
Yes.
And then someone, his friend, being like, look, you know, the problem was that you didn't have friends around you telling you not to dress up like a clown and kill people.
Yeah.
Like, Joe's like, you were abandoned, man.
That was the issue, yeah.
You didn't have people around you telling you not to report on Sandy Hook like that. Even though we have, I don't know, a deposition of Paul Joseph Watson saying, I told him not to do this.
There was that.
Yeah.
There was that.
This is some bullshit. We were trying to make it not Alex's fault that he's done every bad thing he's done in his career. Ridiculous.
These are the people who bitch about participation trophies.
They do in this episode.
This is the most, like... Hey, look, just because you failed a million times upwards to the tune of millions of dollars doesn't mean you're not still great.
It's participation trophies and personal responsibility and ideas. Like these people who I think that's all they keep repeating over and over and over again. And here you have like, Alex, it's not your fault. People just left you. People left you on your own. And that's why you had to say that people were crisis actors who were grieving for their dead family members.
I'm starting to think a lot of people's criticisms of entitled white men are right on.
Yeah, but I'm probably just a 23-year-old who's worried about the 23-year-olds around me.
It could be that. You're right.
Yeah. So when you are... hearing something like Alex saying that he's not using Joe for exposure, how would you hear that?
Like a punch to the face.
And here's the deal. I'm not using you in this interview, but you're so big and the system wants to watch what you're doing. So I can get messages through when you're on the show. So one of the things I wanted to say to the left is, I know more about the left than the average left person the left does.
Cool. I hear Alex say, I'm not using you, but I know that more people will listen because you're here as him saying, I'm using you.
I don't understand how you could be friends with Alex for this long without finding out his rhetorical trick of saying, I'm not doing, but, and then doing the thing.
Yeah.
Because literally... he does that every time.
Alex's son named his show I'm Not Bragging as a joke about
that. I'm not doing this. I'm not using you. I'm doing this means I'm using you.
Yeah.
Every
time.
For
the reason that I then explained.
I don't hang out with him real life. Only on the context of this show occasionally.
Yeah.
And I picked up on that real fast.
So I kept this clip in just because it's like, I think it's kind of indicative of some stretches of this episode where it's like what I was talking about earlier. It's like, this is boring.
Yeah.
This is just them having a conversation that I don't care about, but it goes on.
You ever have a Kopi Luwak coffee?
No.
Oh my God.
That's not even a real Razorback though.
Kopi Luwak coffee is coffee that comes from a civet. So the civet eats the coffee beans shits them out. And then people collect them and clean them up and then sell them. And it makes the best fucking coffee ever.
When you said if I tried it, I've heard of it.
It's so good. It's really good. Like it's a cat. Like a civet is kind of a cat. It's like real close.
By the way, do you have ragdoll?
You have a photograph of a civet?
By the way, do you have ragdoll cats?
Yeah. Hold on. Let's look at a civet.
Now, I wasn't trying to stalk you, but because I watch the show a lot. Today, I'm going, hey, you've got ragdoll cats. Tell Joe you've got them. So I didn't know you had ragdoll cats.
They're sweet cats.
They're smart.
Well, they're really relaxed.
Pretty blue eyes. Yeah, there's your civet.
Yeah. So that animal shits out coffee beans, and then it's super expensive. It's called Kopi Luwak.
I've heard of it.
Yeah.
So is it really good?
It's really good.
Wow. Great.
I've been on road trips. I've been on road trips with comics before.
Yeah.
And there was one I will remember forever because the two people in the back just started having such a boring conversation mm-hmm. while I was driving. I drove so much faster just because their conversation was boring.
Yeah.
That is the worst. I would literally stop being friends with people who had that conversation.
Yeah, I was listening to that and I just sort of...
Whoa.
There was a couple points, and that was one of them, where I was just sort of like rubbing my temples.
Wow.
Like, don't know what's going on here.
Oh, my God. Guys.
This is
on purpose.
This is what's going to stop the globalists.
This is what's on purpose.
Yeah.
You can edit things.
Well, Joe has a big message that he wants to get across on this episode, and that is that we need to get rid of tribalism. And when he says tribalism, he's talking about the idea of looking at everybody as teams, like Democrats,
right.
Republicans.
Right, right, right.
We need to get over that and start looking at each other as people who have ideas and look at the ideas that each other have. And if I have a better idea than your idea, then my idea will win and you will then have my idea.
All I hear is I would like people to stop criticizing rich white men.
Maybe.
That could be it.
We are dealing with the remnants of a savage past where people killed people with stone axe tools.
And now we do it with chemtrails and vaccines.
But, slow down! My point is, we're connected with this idea that we have to, absolutely have to, be in opposition with each other.
No, I agree.
I don't think
we gotta be Crips or Bloods. That's dumb.
It's nonsense. That's the weakness. The weakness is not like flip-flopping or reconsidering your opinions. The real weakness is the really thinking that people that are just marginally different from you in terms of the way they look at things, that those people are your enemy.
We have to stop seeing each other as the enemy.
But
that's what I want,
actually.
If
we just talk.
Do you know who you're talking to? Alex spends all of his time talking about how his imaginary enemies are like working for the literal devil.
Yep.
Like, this is a fine point that he's making, but it's farcical to be making it while sitting next to Alex fucking Jones. Like, hey, you know what you should do after this? You should ask him what he thinks about Democrats. What does he think about? Like, he thinks they're all demons.
Oh,
he thinks
God.
That they're literally possessed by demons.
Yep. Yep. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh my God!
I mean, sure, it's a fine thought. The idea.
Alex does agree with him. He would like that to be the perfect world, and it can only come about in an all white nation. It seems like that's kind of the tribalism that
all-white
I would like to
Christian.
Yeah, I would like
male
to focus
dominated.
On those tribalism parts that he kind of focuses
yeah,
on.
Yeah.
Maybe those tribalism parts are the worst ones
no,
to
we,
start with.
We have to overcome it, though, as Joe is very
Great.
Repetitively
Great.
Pointing
Thanks.
Out.
I think the thing that is most difficult to overcome in our pursuit for the understanding of the reality of the universe.
White male
tribal
hegemony?
Behavior.
Oh, I was so
thinking
close.
Thinking that there's a team that's in opposition to you and your beliefs, which are righteous and true and good.
But if I don't have tribalism, somebody's going to overtake me. So I don't like tribalism as a necessary evil. Like, I don't want a government, but I need a strong enough government that has limited government to protect me from tyrannical governments.
Right. I understand. I think maybe the solution is an understanding of tribalism and then an agreement to never engage in it. And when people do engage in it, you should look at those people as being foolish.
I agree. So we need a
what?
Code of good versus bad,
yeah.
Positive versus sin.
Look,
not the Christian cosmology of sin. What is a sin against humanity? I think lying. I think being a chicken shit. I think being a coward. I think
yeah.
not.
Yeah.
So what's
yeah.
evil?
Alex, I find you guilty of your own sins against humanity.
You know what I love? To listen to two dumber people have a conversation that was famous for happening 2,500 years ago.
Well, this is the...
this is the exact... What are we doing?
This is the problem with so much, like, online-based discourse and, like... The whole, the sort of debates that
yeah,
happen, like,
yeah.
among people who are self-taught
yeah.
and everything. Like,
Jesus, guys.
A lot of the times you don't realize that these ideas that you think are so revolutionary are things you might encounter in your first year in college.
Yeah.
Like, there is so much past these points that they're getting to where their minds are blown. But also, I mean, like, I would take Rogan, like, as a good faith actor here.
Sure,
and,
sure.
And I would say that, okay, now this is interesting.
Okay.
Now, how would you achieve this?
There we go. Joe, you are on the right track, buddy.
Now, what does it mean for you to say that we should disincentivize people to act tribally? And then if people do begin to act tribally, we should look at them as fools.
Yes.
What does that mean?
It means that...
How is society organized in
what
this?
What we need to do is give people a fine... For engaging in behavior with groups larger than 1,000.
Wait, wait. So now we have to have a fine for being foolish?
For being a fool!
This is not enforceable in any way. And if you tried, it would get so out of hand. It would be absolutely used to crack down on vulnerable populations trying to band together.
But they don't think about that because they've never been the vulnerable population getting cracked down on.
But they do think that they are.
Of course they
do. Because they're conservatives who are,
so
who are
fucking...
shadow banned.
You know, the reason I used to... Here's what I used to think that has just been blown away by this very conversation. The reason I thought people who have spent their entire lives studying this type of thing, having a conversation and that becoming popular, the reason I thought... The thing that blocked that for me, I thought, was that it would be too dry. It would be too boring, you know? But this conversation is more boring than anything I can think of.
Yeah.
This is... tragically boring, and more people are going to watch that than two people who've spent their entire life studying these questions.
Yeah, I have, I don't know. It's tough for me to say because I guess I'm not a normal person necessarily, and I am, you know, 36. I'm on a different period of my life as maybe the target demographic of Joe Rogan.
Sure.
But like,
23-year-old meatheads, I suppose.
Yeah, or potheads.
Who are afraid of,
I think a lot of people think of, like, college lectures and, like, academic conversation to be really boring. But this is fucking boring.
This is incredibly boring.
Yes, and the difference is, if you engage with the academic stuff, you probably learn something.
It's amazing.
You're not going to learn anything from this other than... I think Joe's a little bit disappointed in Alex.
Yeah.
Because when Joe's talking about this need to overcome tribalism and Alex is like, I need my tribe to fight back against any other tribe.
Yeah, yeah.
I think there's a sense of Joe being like, you don't get it. You don't get the higher level thing that I'm imagining.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah,
granted,
yeah,
what he's imagining is a
stupid,
fantastical
stupid
utopia that he has no idea how to attain.
You just can't see my flying Pegasus world, and it's disappointing to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But despite all that disappointment, I mean, the two of them are friends, and we can prove it.
Like, and then, like, 2 years later, we shot a video during the contested election making fun of the Bushes.
Well, you and I dressed up. I dressed up like Junior.
Junior.
And you were senior.
Yeah. And I was in a wheelchair.
And we went running around the Capitol, and we smoked a little weed, allegedly.
Every single time these two talk, this story comes up.
Wow.
Which leads me to suspect that maybe there aren't that many memories.
Yeah, that kind of suggests.
Maybe they got high and ran around the Capitol in masks.
You know, I think that the basis, like the stories for any friendship and that you share, should not be, I guess you had to be their stories, you know? Because this story is one where I'm like, if I was there, it would be funny, but this is
no. I mean, I've seen it. They videotaped it.
Cool.
I've watched it.
It was still 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, like you've had experiences like that with friends. You can extrapolate like how much fun that must have been.
Sure.
And it was like, you know, 99, 2000. It's just you're free. You know, like such a different time. We were just coming out of grunge. Maybe a few years.
Yeah.
I just think it's kind of depressing.
Yeah.
I've heard this on other podcasts, too, like people who only have one story.
Yeah.
And every time this guest is on, that story comes up.
Yeah.
And it's just like,
yeah,
get a new story, guys.
Live. Live. Yeah. Stop talking and live.
Yeah. So in this next clip, we get again another thing, another instance of this mentality that Alex has where he wants to be like Rogan with this, like, yeah, we need to get rid of all this tribalism stuff, but I also need mine.
Yeah, well, yeah, I don't have $100 million.
And this is Alex expressing that, like, you know, his nationalism is basically a cult.
Yeah.
But he needs that cult.
Well.
Because he imagines that his enemies are also a cult.
Well.
And so he needs his cult to fight their cult.
But yeah, I'm creating my own enemy in order to destroy myself. I don't understand what you don't understand.
And I'm creating my own enemy to justify really fucked up things that I want.
Exactly.
We have to use our own nationalism, which has failed and has problems and is cultic. But our cult's better than their cult. Humans organizing cults, it's our nature. I agree we should transcend it. You're at that point, Joe. I can see up on the mountain. I get where you're going. I'm just saying, when you're in a crisis, though, it's like the lower brain. It is the nationalist cult of free market and money and family and God and guns and everything that's going to counter the Chi-Coms, where, man, you work 18 hours a day, and if you complain, your ass is dead.
Yeah.
Because the global model is communist China, and all I'm saying is they're taking over. So what do we do about that?
Good response, Joe.
First of all, whenever you're in a situation where you're coming to me for global advice, we got real problems.
I think there's a humility in Joe's responses.
I appreciate that.
You know, like, come on, why the fuck are you asking me for a solution? Now, unfortunately, he does continue and give an idea of a solution.
Well, I mean, he can't not.
And he should have stopped it. You shouldn't ask me because this is dumb.
But honestly, I do look at it like when you say, like, what do we do about it? If you could wave a magic wand, you'd make them all do mushrooms. All of them. Just all of them. Everybody. Anybody in a position of power, anybody locked into an ideology, anybody who believes nonsense, anybody who believes things that they know aren't true.
I'll come clean.
But they'll fight for them. Do you know people that know that the things they believe aren't true?
How dare
yet
you?
Yet they'll get angry at you and fight
How
for them?
How dare you?
There's a weirdness
How
to that.
How fucking
there's no
dare
doubt
you?
That if more people took hallucinogens, they would. But then some will go crazy.
Some will go crazy. Yeah. Yeah. Some kids break their legs.
No, but when you see like an Islamic leader, you can tell they've never taken it.
What?
Wow.
What?
Wow.
What?
Yeah. No, right. No Muslims have ever tripped or something. This is, I mean, this is embarrassing.
That's spectacular.
This is like Joe Rogan's like 50.
No. He
or
look,
at least in his late 40s.
He did something.
Everybody's got to do shrooms.
He
man.
Did something I never thought anyone could do, which is he took the four ways to learn and really condensed it still further down to one way.
Fungus.
Mushrooms.
Yeah.
All right.
So here's how we solve Israel-Palestine.
He's got to be like, that's got to be like a joke.
It's got to be his brand.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, there's no way you could really think that.
No, he's just doing, like, I imagine if your job is to essentially be high all the time, you know, you've got to lean into it. You know, Doug Benson didn't stop doing weed jokes just because he got to 50 plus.
Right.
You know,
I've done mushrooms and it is a fun experience, and under the right circumstances.
Sure.
I also know a lot of shitheads who've done a lot of mushrooms.
Yes. They are all for universal basic income, Dan.
I don't know if they are. It does not solve anything. It's not a miracle cure.
No,
it's not like, oh, if you're living in a contradiction, you take mushrooms. It straightens you right out.
That's how it always works.
What kind of hippy-dippy bullshit is this?
Every story that I've ever heard about hallucinogenics has been, oh, man, it straightened out my political philosophy. That's what it did.
Made sure all those inconsistencies I had in my head just went away, resolved everything.
The thing that I thought most on my trip was just like, a progressive tax policy does work as intended.
I expect this, in a bong circle with a guy
totally.
Coming out of the mouth of someone wearing like a blown glass necklace on a hemp braid.
Yeah.
You know, like that's what I expect. I don't expect this out of a 100 millionaire.
Yeah.
Who's almost 50.
Jesus.
Have some dignity,
Have
sir.
Have some fucking. He didn't get to be 100 millionaire by having dignity or learning things. He got to 100 million by being a guy who took shrooms.
It says, you got to wave a magic wand and everybody in the world does shrooms, especially the people who believe things that aren't true, like the person I'm sitting right next to.
Why do we always make the people most deserving of a slap to the face the most famous and rich people available?
And good at martial arts.
Yeah, exactly.
So this next clip, Alex reveals that he's probably taken some hallucinogens. He might have even done acid with Joey Diaz.
Watch out.
Or he got dosed by Joey Diaz and pissed his pants.
One way or the other.
What was the UFC you invited me to in Houston like 8-9 years ago with Joey Diaz?
Didn't you guys allegedly do acid? Allegedly?
Well, let's no, let's go back. Joey Diaz, that was another time. Joey Diaz hands me a cookie in Houston. See you. We ate Mexican food.
Yes.
Hey, I couldn't get out of the chair. I'm sitting. I'm watching the whole day. I'm
trying to get out of the chair.
Finally, you're up there announcing, and I'm pissing my pants because I'm pissing my pants. I couldn't get up. I swear to God.
Did we go to dinner that night?
We did.
Yeah.
I was like crawling around the ground.
And you couldn't imagine. Joe, you were like, Alex, how high did I get?
Pillar of Christianity, destroyer of globalists.
Yep.
Guy who got dosed by Joey Diaz and pissed his pants at a UFC fight. Alex Jones.
See, now that's where I would like to be. I want to see Joey Diaz roast Alex while he's tripping. Oh, that would be hilarious.
I can't provide that while he's tripping, but there was a time like way back when Joey Diaz came to InfoWars Studios with Rogan.
I did not know that.
Yeah, we can cover that in a future episode.
I like a
That's
good
an
Diaz.
Old one.
I like a good Diaz.
It's really tough, though, because he's screaming at Alex.
Well, that sounds right.
It's something that I've always thought about, like, maybe we'll do that for an episode, but I remember way back I tried to prepare it, and it was just like, holy shit, this is incoherent. But maybe it'd be fun to go back now.
Yeah, that sounds like Joey. Yeah, I like it.
I peed my pants. Alex and I got a crazy time. Yeah. I dosed Alex with way too much THC, and he smells like piss. This fucking guy wouldn't survive in prison. Anyway, in this next clip, Joe, this is another instance where I take him to task. Mm-hmm. I think that this is him revealing what his goals were with having Alex on his podcast. Mm-hmm. And I would say that this is not what he does.
One of the goals that, and this is real, one of the goals that I wanted to achieve is to have people consider that there's people that have wildly different ideas that you do. That may be good guys. So there's maybe people that had ideas of you, and I wanted them to consider that maybe that's a good guy. And if you and Alex were hanging out with me and Eddie Bravo, and we were all in a room together, we would be fucking laughing. We would be laughing hard. We'd be having a lot of fun. It would be fun. It'd be ridiculous. And if you're not in that room, it's easy to judge.
Well, guess what? Guess who's not in that room?
Oh.
The millions of people who are watching.
Yeah.
You're saying like, oh, yeah, I just wanted to show that it's a fun experience to hang out with Alex Jones.
Mm.
But meanwhile, the people who are watching aren't going to have that fun experience. What they are going to see is me fumble and accidentally validate all of the lies that he's trying to disseminate. And hey, man, like, I don't know. Was Pol Pot a fun guy to drink with? Could you have done a podcast with him? Like, I know that's probably an extreme example, but like, yeah, okay. Yeah, you can get along with people who are like Goebbels.
Yeah.
Is he fun? I don't know.
I don't know.
Let's hope we never find out.
I don't think so. I just don't think he was that kind of guy.
Probably not. But you know what
I'm saying. He's a real Sudoku guy. He wasn't really a hangout.
Joe is basically saying that his goal was to launder Alex to his audience by virtue of seeing how much fun we can
hang out with. Furthermore, how about fuck you? You would have fun if you were in a room with me and Alex Jones and Eddie Bravo. What if you were a fucking Muslim woman?
Not much fun.
Not much fun.
No.
To have the guy across from you who is saying shit like, I want you to. Yeah, a trans person. What if you were not a white guy?
Yeah.
Huh?
Well, Eddie's a person of color.
Okay.
Anyway, look, here's what I would say.
Eddie's Eddie.
Here's what I would say. If this was your goal, then you have a responsibility to not allow Alex to talk about anything conspiracy related or anything political on your show.
Yep.
If your goal was just to talk about how fun Alex is, you guys have an interview and a talk where you get drunk and talk about college football and high school and like talk about that stuff.
Yeah.
You do not talk about the globalists. You don't talk about his bullshit because then that intersects with where his misinformation is.
And you especially don't turn it into a callback
that
you can always go back to and say, hey, look, we had him on our show and he checked out.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think something's wrong, I'll tell you, he checked out when I looked into
it. It's a perfect case of wanting to play both games at the same time.
Yeah.
It's like, I wanted to show the world that you were fun by getting fucked up with you and tacitly supporting your conspiracies. Like, that's not, you can't pretend that you're fact checking him and showing that he's fun because you're doing neither.
It's almost as though he grew up kind of choosing the path of least resistance, you know, to just kind of get along with everybody around him and just kind of not make anybody too
mad. That's how you form your identity.
That could be how you form your identity, Dan.
So I will say that Joe is not comfortable with how much Alex wants to talk about how famous he is.
What is it like to be, you know, the main oracle? Because you can say, like, you know, Jimmy Carson was this guy.
Jimmy?
Walter Cronkite was that guy. You're kind of that fused together.
They were on a first.
You have the audience or bigger. When every other media has been atomized, InfoWars is a close second or whatever, but it doesn't matter. It's not about that. You're in the position of being the oracle.
Close.
What is that like?
Second.
Oracle Adelphi right now.
Well, you're definitely not helping me with your weird description of what I do. Because it's not accurate, nor is it respectful. It's ridiculous.
He's a little bit more playful when he's saying it's. It sounded like he was actually saying that's disrespectful.
Joe
he was being a little bit more playful.
Yeah, a little
tongue-in-cheeking. But he is uncomfortable, and he should be. That's fucking weird.
Yeah, I would not be comfortable with that.
Joe interviews people and has informal conversations that go too long. And Alex is like, you're the Oracle of Delphi.
Yeah,
you're basically Walter Cronkite and Jimmy Carson.
Old Jimmy Carson.
Oh,
man. He had some of those great jokes. He used to wear a turban.
Joe Rogan actually was on Jimmy Carson, and he got waved over to the love seat.
Made his career. Yeah. Made his career. Overnight success.
That's how he got in at the store.
Oh, Jimmy Carson.
So one of the things that I think was a big point that I made early on in our podcast, and I maybe make it less now because I don't like him nearly as much as I used to.
Yeah.
Not to say that I used to like Alex, but I certainly dislike him more.
Yes. Yes.
I actively dislike him a lot more.
Yeah.
But one thing that I still do believe, but I think is probably less important, is that the role that he used to fill is kind of a good role in society.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of guy who will freak you out. And maybe it's your brother's friend or something who tells you about the CIA or whatever.
Sure, 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 sure.
That is a voice that there is a place for in society.
Mm-hmm.
A conspiracy theorist who, you know, doesn't behave the way that Alex does. The guy who's not also...
Who can't hurt anybody.
A complete racist, bigot, monster, anti-Semite, throwing around demon shit all the time. You know,
somebody without malice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There is a place for that.
Yeah.
And I think Joe, like, he touches on, like, why Alex has anything. And it's because there was a place that he fit in before.
You've taught me a lot of things, and this is very important. Like I said earlier on the show about people using other departments or other law enforcement or whatever to start smashing polite protests and turning them into violent protests. Like, until you showed me all that stuff about agent provocateurs, I really had no idea that anybody would ever think like that. I had this naive perspective that I think a lot of people have, that people that are in government and people that are in leadership, they really just want the best for the citizens.
So there is a role that can be filled of, like, discussing these kinds of topics aren't necessarily front and center.
Sure.
There's a value to that.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, the double edge of this clip is it so clearly demonstrates why what Alex is doing nowadays is useless.
Yeah.
Like, yes, in the 90s, Alex woke you up to the idea of agent provocateurs.
Right.
That is his niche.
Right.
That's what he should be.
Right.
He strayed too far and ended up being a guy who can shift into psychic spaces. And his lore is a little too complicated now. His skill set is absurd.
Yeah. He's a show that went on too long. He's ending the way Game of Thrones did.
I think he's a victim of his own success.
Yeah, probably.
Like, whatever the reason, he got like millions of dollars and ended up in that flashy ass studio. Mm-hmm. It's the detriment of his career. Like, he could probably have lived out a pretty successful, making a good living, being a conspiracy theory talk show host. But he got too big for his britches, and now this is embarrassing.
No, comedians are funnier when they're on the bus. Like, yeah. I've never dreamt of being like famous. I've always just wanted to be a comic who lived his life as like a comic. Like, I want to live comic life. I don't want millions. I definitely don't want $100 million.
You want enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Having too much might end up being, it might make you unable to do whatever it is you need to do. Because once you start going down this road and you start worrying about like pill sales and, and all this, you start to think about like, what are the things that I'm doing that gets the most attention from people?
Sure.
And then, you know, it's no longer, hey, here's a boring conversation about the reality of agent provocateurs and what you need to know about the history of this tactic.
Right.
It now becomes everybody is pretending that they have relatives who have died because it's exciting, because it excites the internet and it gets you traffic.
Yeah.
Because your incentive is no longer to educate or whatever, if that was his intention at the beginning.
I guess.
It's now a marketing-based thing.
It's you know, the idea of not trying to be a millionaire and doing every single possible step you can take to get there is radical socialist commie bullshit, Dan, and you're on my list.
Fair enough. So, whereas Alex 30 years ago turned Joe on to agent provocateurs, this is what he does now.
I'm in Arizona 3 weeks ago. I got a call from the White House. High level. Well, I mean, you know, a Trump son. Not a secret. I'll just say it's not about name dropping.
Too late.
They go, you need to look into Dominion and Communist China and Switzerland and all this stuff. They go, call this guy. This guy calls me up from like this big company and tells me all this stuff. And so I hire a company to look at it. We get all the SEC documents thrown on InfoWars, all the news today. And but this is, I asked them, I said, why are you telling me this? And they go, we've chosen you as the conduit. I'm almost like, is that to discredit it? Because they've said I'm discredited.
Right. But that's the thing. Like, they can do that with someone.
So that's full of shit. He just took that from QAnon Twitter accounts and stuff. That was just a conspiracy that he laundered. But it's interesting there at the end when he's talking about, like, are they doing this to discredit me? Like,
That moment of self-reflection was very strange.
Why would Trump's son do that? You forgot that you said that he was your source.
Yeah.
This doesn't make any sense.
I mean, it does make sense if you think that they're trying to discredit him.
He's just lying and telling these intriguing stories to Joe to keep his attention.
Yeah.
And he just keeps lying.
What's the percentage of people that vote?
Usually it's about 60% in a national election, about 49% in an off-year election, up down to 40%. But with the whole metric with Trump, they had an overturn of about 90% Democrat.
How many?
80% Republican turnout, yeah.
How many? What?
They had 90% Democrat turnout.
90?
It's 90%.
Never happened. It's statistically fake.
It's never happened.
It's 90%?
It's fraud proof. No, they just used all Democrat voters.
Right, but do you know that for a fact?
Look it up. Like 87% of Democrats voted, yeah.
In the 2020 election, there was a 66.7% voter turnout. Alex is just making shit up and saying it confidently, which allows him to lie to Joe's face and not get called on it. Because Joe is attached to the messenger, and Alex knows that, he's exploiting it. Ugh. But the end goal is attention. The end goal is attention. He lies to Joe in order to disseminate this information, and because Joe doesn't have the wherewithal to push back on it, be like, oh, fuck yourself. There's no way there was a 90% Democrat turnout. What the fuck are you talking about? Because he doesn't have that, or maybe he doesn't want to cause conflict or whatever. Whatever reason, these talking points end up being laundered to Joe's audience.
Yep.
if people look up to Joe and they respect him, he's sitting there and he's allowing this point to stand.
Tacit endorsement, yeah.
Exactly. But again, the goal is attention. And you can see that very clearly in this clip.
Imagine being like the hot chick back in like 1963.
The cum dump.
Well, let's look at it in a respectful way, Alex. The hot chick.
Jesus Christ.
Back in 62, when there wasn't that many of them. You know, there wasn't no Instagram models.
Marilyn, cum dump Moreau.
How dare you? You keep saying that.
This, the meme gold here is like beyond.
What's that?
This is like the meme gold is beyond it.
Meme gold? Okay.
Wow. That's the cringiest shit I've ever heard. Just, he's so tickled by the idea that him saying cum dump is going to be meme gold.
Ugh.
Oh, they're going to meme this so much.
I can't think of it. I don't want you to play this on our show. It's so gross.
Really disgusting.
It's disgusting.
Yeah.
Oh, look.
There's two different kinds of disgusting. There's the obvious disgusting.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's the disgusting of, like, how transparently pathetic is this? Like, how badly you want someone to make a meme out of you.
Yeah, yeah.
Someone should make a meme of all the times he's desperately begging to have memes made of
him. Yeah.
I mean, like, because that's the reality of this. It's everything that he's saying that's, like, kind of gross and offensive is then tagged with, I'm trying to get the memes going.
Yeah.
So sad. Also sad, Alex makes a claim about something that Bill Gates said on Japanese TV.
Mm-hmm.
And because they're doing this and then putting it out later, Alex is able to drop in proof of his claim.
All right.
Which they do about four or five times. None of it proves anything. But this is the most egregious example.
Okay.
This is outrageous. And Joe, if you're listening, which I know you're not, I would say listen to this. Listen to the proof that Alex tagged on. He had all the time in the world to find the proof
all
that
the
he
time.
Needed.
Edit it later? This put it back in.
This is what he chose. This is your guy.
No, Bill Gates said, oh, don't worry. The Japanese TV goes, this is going to kill people. He goes, it's for other countries. Now, you know, the printer goes, oh, what the heck?
I don't know if exactly what you said is representative of what was said. Yeah.
How many times have I told you?
A lot. But when you go down Crazy Town,
he was on Japanese
I gotta let
TV.
You know, I don't have a map. Well,
he said
of the
it,
territory.
He said it more defended. He goes,
yes.
He's on Japanese TV, and they go, you know, vaccine caused damage. People not like it. About
Jesus, man.
But they claim you want to depopulate. And he goes, Japan, China, the United States are not the target. We have special vaccines for other countries. He goes, oh, yes, sir. I mean, it was like,
he said
the
that
deal. Yeah, dude.
Can I see that? Can you show me that? I'll end on this because I gotta pee again.
I don't. Yeah, let's take a piss. I'll find it. We'll do it right now.
I'd say it's an ironic if you take somebody who's doing their best to get the world ready and, you know, putting, in my case, billions of dollars into these tools for infectious diseases and really trying to solve broadly infectious diseases, including those that can cause pandemics. But that, you know, we're in a crazy situation, so there's going to be crazy rumors. I hope, whether it's individuals or countries, that in some ways this shows us how interdependent we are, that to stop a global pandemic, we need to find whoever's the best, whatever the best vaccine construct are, the best drugs, and we need to make it without just focusing on one country. We need to make it for the entire world, including for countries that don't have the resources to pay for vaccine research or vaccine factories. You know, they're actually, in many ways, should be the priority for what we do.
That's the whole clip that Alex plays.
He played that clip?
To prove that Bill Gates went on Japanese TV and said, Japan, China, U.S., you guys get a different vaccine.
I really feel like that proved the opposite of what he was saying.
It certainly didn't prove anything.
It didn't prove anything.
No.
It kind of proved that Bill didn't say that.
It kind of proves that Alex makes shit up, or he has such a flimsy grasp on reality that he hears that clip, and that's what he thinks Bill Gates is saying.
He has to believe that that's, like, he's so smart, he's reading in between the lines.
I would assume that that's the most generous
explanation. That's the only thing that makes sense.
Yes.
Because that literally says everyone should get the vaccine and we should focus on countries who can't make it for themselves.
Yeah, they should be a priority.
Yeah.
Because it is also a global issue as opposed to one country's problem to solve.
Yeah.
I don't, like, I like to say I don't get it. I don't understand. But like there are a limited number of explanations.
Yeah.
One is Alex is intentionally misleading.
Mm-hmm.
The second is he is a consumer of bullshit news sites.
Yeah.
And he thinks he's never watched the clip. He just has read a headline about it from National File or whatever.
Sure.
And he thinks that's what it said. Or he watched it and that's what he interpreted it as.
Yeah.
And it's completely erroneous.
Putting it in later, it's so
sad.
Confusing?
It's not confusing.
Why would you do that? You know?
I don't know. I mean, I think that there are some words that you can say that sound very similar.
Sure.
And depending on what you think the word is what you will hear.
That could be.
I think that Alex would probably assume that he's implanted the idea that that's what Bill Gates was saying.
Yeah.
So if you hear that, that's how, if you think Alex knows shit, that's how you'll
interpret. You'll be primed for the correct interpretation of his. So
that's what I assume he thinks.
It's almost like a fucking gaslighting three-pointer. You know, it's like, I'm going to tell you what you're about to hear doesn't say what you're about to hear.
Yeah, or you just think people will just, like, not really pay attention.
Yeah, that's probably true.
And be like, oh, he played a clip of Bill Gates. It must have said.
Rogan's in the bathroom. I'll skip this part.
Listen, Rogan's fans are the meatheads and the potheads. Like, you know, you can trick them.
That's fair. That is fair.
So once again, Joe takes issue with people who critique his podcast interview with Alex.
So strange.
And this one is also not a good point.
Well, there was a lot of people that got tricked. They got tricked into thinking that the podcast was something other than what it was. And they read someone else's description. And more people do that than listen. Because, you know, we did 3 hours plus, right? How many did we do? 320 or something like that? Yep. Something crazy. There's no way they listened. There's someone they don't like for 3 hours and 20 minutes. Like, why would they do that?
Yeah, why would we do that?
All right, Joe, that's a personal insult.
Yeah.
That one is personal.
Yeah.
That one's personal. That is not abroad. These liberals are doing it. That's you specifically, Dan.
Why? You know, what's most tragic about that is I don't have a good answer.
I don't have a good answer either. Yeah.
Why would people listen to hours of someone they hate?
That's a good question. That's a good question. Also,
you just described my job.
Don't you dare say 20 hours like, oh, look at how much work we did. Screw you. But we put more time in talking about you dudes. Talk.
Yeah, but I mean, I do understand that deflection of like, it was really long. People couldn't have possibly listened to it if they thought it was shit.
Sure.
And like, no, I mean, I'm more primed to listen to something that I think is shit
than
something that is bad.
Yeah.
Like, this was way more painful than Joe's episode.
Oh, totally.
And granted, this is 4 hours, that was 3.5 or whatever, but like, Alex was hot-dogging on Joe's show, which at least makes some kind of an entertainment value.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe knows that this is his platform and he has to have some semblance of
a
trying.
Yeah.
And so, like, those dynamics played out on Joe's show, which made it a little bit more of interesting than this, which is long stretches of nothing.
No, this is two dudes
and Alex being like, you're so famous.
This is a two-person,
let's make a meme.
This is a two-person smoke circle, and that's the worst to possibly be in.
Alex doesn't have the showmanship chops to carry this as like a show. So it being on Alex's turf is a problem.
Mm.
Joe is not as good as like when he's a guest as he is when he's on his own show, because he'll just talk about how he ate or drank some coffee that a civet shit out.
Do you get it? Isn't that gross? But it's good. How can that be?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like this must have been an apology. Like,
something.
I feel like this has to be a thing where Rogan said, you can't come on my my election special.
I'll go on your
show. Show up at your place.
Yep,
but I won't be on your actual show. Uh-huh. We'll just get drunk and record something.
Yeah.
I feel like it has to be something like that. Some kind of olive branch.
Yeah.
I don't know. But
it's a real bummer.
There is no point for this to exist other than for them to try and get attention.
Yeah.
It's absurd.
Unlike Wild Mountain Time, which exists only for itself, Dan.
Sure. So we have one last clip, and it's Alex really summing things up well. And I think Joe nails it.
All right. Well, I've been on air 27 years. And Joe Rogan, I want to thank you for everything. I want to tell you this is the best 4 hours I ever spent. Thank you so much, my
That's
friend.
What's outrageous. Outrageous about this world. That's what's outrageous.
What is it?
This could be your best show. This was nonsense.
It is nonsense.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. I like ideas, man. I do. I like ideas. That's why I like listening to things that I don't agree with. I like listening to Alex Jones because I like finding... first of all, I mean, he says stupid things like
sure.
Alex with guns and shit.
Great.
There are certain things that just wouldn't normally come up in conversations of people I enjoy and sure. I find interesting.
Sure.
Podcasts that I would listen to for pleasure. Certainly, a lot of those things wouldn't be overlapping with Alex.
Right.
That's why I listen to stuff like Project Camelot.
Mm-hmm.
I like ideas.
Yeah.
Whether
weirdest ideas that you can possibly get. Let's fly in the face of danger and see if something might be true. What if one thing is true, Dan? Just like Joe was saying.
Yeah.
Just because he's lied a million times doesn't mean you won't find that one grain of gold.
I didn't know about that Civet coffee.
Yeah. Right. There we go. We did it.
Outside of that, I don't think there was any ideas that were interesting that were presented on this show.
No.
I think it was a disaster. Mm-hmm. I think it was stupid.
Here's a thought that I have never been able to escape ever since I was like really, really young.
You got to escape this thought.
It's helped me so far. Like whenever I was like 10 years old, I remember hearing all of my friends have this conversation. And I remember being in the middle of it talking about it. And I remember thinking there's no possible way that 10-year-olds in 1990 blah are having a new or interesting thought. So if I am having a conversation, think for a second. Did somebody have this conversation several thousand years ago? And then maybe just read.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe read instead of being like, so here's what I think about the universe, and what we should do is we should give everybody, you know, like, we got to get rid of
shrooms.
Tribalism, and we got to do shrooms. And like, hey, maybe somebody's fucking thought about it before.
Yeah, yeah. That is a perspective that it's important to have.
Yeah.
I do agree with you on that. I think that exploring ideas conversationally is a fun pastime. And I think that that's what a lot of people do in college.
Sure.
And I think that it's what people do socially. I think that it's a fun thing to do with friends.
Totally.
I don't know if it's always productive. I certainly know from listening to this that it's not entertaining.
Yes, that's a good one.
I don't know. I come away with this. I tried to like really distill down like the points
mm-hmm.
that run through this because there are trends, and all I could come up with are left versus right tribalism.
Sure.
Nonsense.
Yeah.
That seems to be a thing that Joe really wants to talk about.
It's all about interpretation. There's no possible way that somebody could be correct.
You got to overcome tribalism. Joe really wants to point that out.
Of course.
Alex wants to talk about how famous Joe is
mm-hmm.
and how great it is that he's on Spotify. And then Alex just is too overt and too obvious about his wanting to be a meme.
Desperation, yeah.
It's just, it's tragic. It's... Like, I keep saying it's cringeworthy, but that's the only thing, that's the only way I can describe it. It's exposing his vulnerable underbelly of desperation.
I mean, what's wild to me is, ostensibly, these are two professional broadcasters. How can you have this boring of a conversation when you've been doing this or some facsimile of this job, this very job that you are doing for 20 or 30 years, and you come up with this? This is what you've got.
And one of the people is the Jimmy Carson of our time.
The Jimmy Carson of our times, man. And you're wasting it.
And the other one's a close second.
Yeah. You are no Ed McMahon, sir.
No.
No.
So there you go, folks. You got it.
Yep, you wanted it.
You wanted it. You got it.
You got stuff like everybody should do shrooms.
Yep. I think I might have also only decided to do this episode because I came up with the title for it long in advance, and that was Fourth Try, Not a Charm.
Nice.
Because this stunk. But we'll be back on Monday with a discussion of whether or not Alex moved to D.C. and is living in a tenement camp.
Let's hope he is.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, that'll be good news.
We'll be back then. But until then, Jordan, we have a website.
We do have a website. It's knowledgefight.com.
You bet it is. We're also on Twitter.
We are on Twitter. It's at @knowledge_fight and at @GoToBedJordan.
Dramatic timing.
Thank you.
We're also on Facebook.
We are on Facebook. If you're Dallas Shy, too stranded. And if you could, please find a local charity or bail fund in your area to help out those still doing God's work.
Yeah, we'll be back. Until then, I'm Neo. I'm Leo. I'm DZX Clark. I'm Daryl Rundis. Hey, why don't you try out that rifle?
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.